Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 91st episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. As you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to use the hashtag EduAllStars. Even if you're in your car, like you're on your treadmill, whatever, use the hashtag EduAllStars throughout the week. It doesn't have to be tonight. Like, use it whenever you want. So we love seeing those conversations and hearing things that stick out to you.
And we are so excited about this week's guest. We have John Spencer, who is a teacher in Phoenix, Arizona. He is also the co-founder of Rideabout and the author of the popular book, Wendell, the World's Worst Wizard. So thank you, John, for being on with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Well, John, the best place we always like to start when doing these is just hearing a little bit about you and kind of how you ended up in education. So what's your story?
It's kind of funny. I didn't initially start out to be a teacher. I was going to college because you have to go to college in my family. It's not really a choice. So, I figured I'd go, figure out what I want to do. But I was working for a faith-based nonprofit in college. So it was an inner-city tutoring and mentoring program. And I really thought I would move from that to actually going to seminary afterwards. So, I mean, that was my goal. And I thought, well, education makes sense. Like, learn how people learn. That's really, fascinated me. And then so did history. So I kind of did a dual major. And I didn't really intend to become a teacher until I started my internship and thought, this is where I belong. Like, this is what I love, what I'm doing here. So with the internship, I started thinking, maybe this is what I want to do. And then eventually, by the time of student teaching, I thought, I want to be a teacher for the rest of my life. But, it was really not, like, it came out of the nonprofit world, not necessarily, like, I didn't love school as a kid. Like, I really didn't love, high school. So I just thought, it was weird to go back into the system and work.
It's funny that you mentioned not loving school. It's like a lot of our guests say the same thing. It's like, I was a horrible student. I don't know if you were a bad student, but I hated school. I was not a good student. I know Jimmy Costas was the same way. He said he was just like a terror in school. He hated school. And yeah. A lot of our guests share that same story. So it's interesting to see. It's like, you were either like straight A, goody two shoes, nerd, or you just couldn't stand school. There's never a middle ground, is there, Todd?
Nope, there really isn't. It's people who knew they were going to be a teacher since they were little kids, or people who were like, I will never be a teacher. And like, that's all I do.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to be a teacher. And yeah. I wasn't really a troublemaker. I was a real quiet kid. I was that kid that was reading a novel behind my math book. I was that kid. So I really just stayed outside of the radar, off the radar. I need to work on idioms, apparently.
The fact that you know what an idiom is better than the two of us, probably.
It's not like a sign that I've taught language arts long enough.
So what grade level are you in now?
So right now I'm teaching 7th and 8th grade photojournalism and computers. So, computers... Basic, your standard computer class with a little more coding and programming built into it. And then really photojournalism is everything from documentaries and photo shoot things to traditional blogging. I just said traditional as if it's really become this big tradition. Like traditional blogging, because that's so old. So it's just kind of like, it's more like digital journalism is how I would describe it.
Cool. So you recently got to speak at the White House Future Ready Summit. Can you tell us a little bit more about that whole situation?
That was so surreal. I mean, you experienced that, right, Todd, getting to go to the White House?
Yeah, it's one of those things that if I did not have the video recording of it, I would never be able to convince myself that it happened.
It's really weird. Like, the day after, you're like, did I really do that? And it's really odd, like you're in the White House and it's the White House. You're going like, I cannot believe I'm here right now in this moment. I didn't take a lot of pictures, but for different reasons than others. Like, I think a lot of people had to wanted to capture it, and that was a really good thing. But I was just at that place where I was like, I'm just going to soak this in and watch it and experience it. And so that was really cool. You know, getting to talk was fun. It was a real different audience. It was all, you know, superintendents, a couple principals. It was not like my standard teacher or student audience. Mm-hmm. But I was a little nervous about the audience, but it seemed to go pretty well.
Well, and switching gears a little bit, you co-founded Rideabout. Can you kind of talk to our listeners a little about what that is and how that came to be?
So the background with that was I had this idea of what I wanted, you know, kind of a blogging publishing platform to be. So, you know, I wanted something that would be the entire writing process, from, you know, inspiration to writing to tutorials during writing, so kids could have help through all the way through, you know, annotation and private editing on the teacher side, you know, then eventually to publishing, with the hopes that there'd be kind of layers of publishing. So, you know, it would go from classmates only or private classmates only, and then eventually public, and so that each post could kind of have that layer of privacy built into it. And you know, that was just kind of something I wanted to build, but I didn't know where to start. I didn't know how to make it happen. You know, I had hacked together something in my class before that worked okay, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be. And so last year I met Brad Wilson. He's the one who founded the Write About This app. Mm-hmm. And we had similar things that we were into. So, I mean, for the last 6 or 7 years, I've been doing these visual writing ideas where, you know, I start with a photo and have a question on top of it. Just real simple, but it was something that was pretty high interest. And so we started talking and just said, you know, what would our dream publishing platform be for kids? You know, what would be the perfect digital, social kind of publishing platform? And from there, we had this conversation at a conference. And then I remember I put it all like in black and white on Keynote, of all things, just sat there and like designed the user interface on Keynote and emailed him the Keynote file and said, this is my dream thing that I want to make happen. And the two of us worked with this other guy, Bob, who's a developer, and we just kind of made it happen. It's really been a fun process. And, you know, it's one of those things where you meet people who say, yeah, I'll do a project with you, and then it doesn't happen. I was a little bit skeptical. And so when we actually started making this thing, it was like, holy crap, we're actually making what we wanted to make. This is crazy. And so, you know, it's still kind of in early stage. We're not officially launching until tomorrow and today, I guess. I mean, technically today is our official launch date, but the classes will... We're pulling it out of beta tomorrow, and yeah, it's official.
Wow, that's awesome.
Super cool. Thanks. So tell us about your book, Wendell, the World's Worst Wizard. I see people talking about it in my Twitter feed all the time. Like, how did that whole thing come about?
So that was really cool. I keep saying that, the same thing. Like, that's really cool. It's a key. Originally came from California. Everything was just cool. So that started with, I've always told stories to my kids when they go to bed, you know, and that was a story that started with, you know, I wanted to have this wizard and he saves the world and I wasn't sure what it would be. And then my son, you know, was the one who said, well, what if he doesn't have magical powers? Like, what if he has no magical powers at all? And I thought, well, he's not a wizard, but then... from there, I thought, you know, what would a wizard with no magical powers do to save his village? You know, and came to the conclusion that he's just really good at making stuff and robotics and engineering. And so, you know, it started out as a story told verbally, and then I began writing it, and then you know, I ended up giving kind of the draft to my wife, and she rewrote it and made it tighter and made it added a lot of action to it, honestly. And, you know, it just ended up being this project we co-wrote. I ended up illustrating. I mean, I did not think that I would illustrate that. So it was really fun.
Awesome. Well, talking about writing and then hearing you and your writing, how do you motivate those kids who don't like to write?
I think one of the things that has helped has been sharing that good writers get frustrated. Like that was kind of something for them to know that I didn't really share with them very often, but that there are moments when you're crafting a story where you just get angry that it's not working. You know, there's people talk about creativity as if it's this like fun kids running through the forest kind of thing, but the truth is it can be incredibly frustrating. And so just letting them know they have the freedom to feel however they want about writing has been one piece that's been helpful. Because I think that just knowing that good writers get frustrated was a piece of it. And then I think the other piece is just really giving them, you know, a lot of creativity, a lot of choice, you know, connecting it to something that matters to them. You know, for writing, we begin with these geek out projects where they choose a topic that they're really into, and then they do research on that topic, and they start their writing not as like a really structured writing thing, but with these like listicle style posts, you know, 7 things you might not know about skateboarding, who are the top 10 skaters of all times, like, and it just becomes this, from the listicle, you know, clickbait style post, they then eventually move into developing, you know, longer paragraphs and stuff like that. So we just go really backwards, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, in my experience as a kid, that research project and student choice was the last thing we got to do at the end of the year. And so I just basically say, let's start there and get you into geeking out. And then by accident, you're going to get into writing.
It's funny you talked about the process of writing and the frustrations. Our friend Angela Watson just wrote a post about this recently on Cornerstone for Teachers, and I was going to pull up the link here, but I can't seem to find it quick enough. You finished too early. So anyway, it's on the Cornerstone for Teachers. You can find that. It's a funny article just talking about that process and all the struggles you come across as an author. So speaking of mutual friends, we have another mutual friend, AJ Giuliani, that you guys are working together with on a new podcast. I want you to talk about that.
So the podcast is called Classroom Questions. It's at classroomquestions.com. And, you know, it's basically we take questions that teachers have, you know, real questions, real answers from real teachers. I mean, that's kind of the idea. And you know, then AJ and I just kind of argue about what the solution is or what the best ideas are. So it could be things like, what's the best way to do Genius Hour, or how do I start coding with kids, or I said coding, that almost sounded like the drug. How do you start coding? But how do you start that, or I'm struggling with management, or and a lot of them are the kind of questions that we've all been through. You know, I'm in year 11, and, you know, one of the questions that was asked recently was, you know, what do you do when you yell at a class? And I would love to say, like, oh, well, I dealt with that my first year, but, you know, that's something that still happens on occasion. I've raised my voice at kids, or I've embarrassed a kid and shamed him. And so even then, it's like sometimes the answer is based on your mistakes and not just, you know, your successes.
Right. So you talk a lot about changing professional development and the way that it currently is for so many. How do you kind of envision the perfect PD to look like?
I think it'd be blended. I mean, I know that's kind of a buzzword, but like I would love to see, you know, teachers getting to kind of choose tracks based on their own, you know, choice. So like one track could be, you know, a year-long class that looks a lot like a college class, but it's the PD that you go to. You know, one teacher could choose a book club and read the book and just delve deeply into the book. Another teacher could do their own, you know, professional growth plan and do an independent project. And, you know, it would just be kind of, you could have another group that's kind of doing their own mini ed camps every so often. And for me, you know, like our school, we get out early every Thursday, and I feel like that time as a district, we kind of squander it by not we end up having staff meetings instead of professional development, from my experience. And so I would love to have teacher choice. And, you know, for teachers who have expertise, part of their professional development would be teaching some of these things, you know, modeling or you're doing coaching so that a teacher who maybe is struggling with classroom management, part of their PD is the modeling and coaching cycle. So I just think it would be cool to have this blended PD where all of it's happening. It would be a mess, and it would be a lot of policy change, but that's what I would love to see happen.
I love that. So, John, thinking about kind of you and your path and who you are now, who do you think inspired you the most to be who you are now?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the easiest answer is probably, like, my family. I mean, my wife has probably inspired me to be who I am a lot. You know, being a dad and the influence that my kids have had on me has definitely changed things. But also, you know, I had a mentor in college who was not just a mentor, he was a great teacher. And so I think he reshaped a lot of how I teach. Everything like to, from the permission to use humor in the classroom to really pushing critical thinking to the assumption that just because a kid is struggling academically doesn't mean that they are incapable of thinking deeply, you know, that kind of stuff. A lot of paradigm shifts that happened from our conversations. And sometimes just hard conversations where he'd call me out for, you know, I'd get frustrated. Like when I would get frustrated in student teaching, the times that I kind of griped about kids, and you know, he would call me out and say, "Well, so what are you going to change? What are you going to change about that?" Not you know, you don't get to get rid of the kid in your class who's not behaving. What do you as a teacher need to do to fix that? And not through punishment, but through relationship and through, you know, making things more meaningful. And so that, I think, was a big part of kind of, you know, how who I ended up being as a teacher.
Right.
What's something you're reading right now that's of interest, maybe education related or not?
I'm actually, it's funny, I'm actually reading something that's not education related at all. I'm rereading, and I think, by the way, that this is going to happen every year. I'm rereading The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman, and I just love that as a fantasy book. And it's just such a deeply existential kind of book and such a story of sacrifice. But more than anything else, that book reminds me what it's like to be a kid, like in a non-nostalgic kind of way. Like I just hit a point at this time of year where I sometimes have forgotten what it's like to be a kid, and I just need that reminder.
Say the title again.
The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Okay, cool.
So, John, when you're having one of those really rough days, what do you kind of do to recenter yourself and bring it all back?
Mm-hmm. I love that question. You know, what I do, honestly, is compartmentalize. Like, which you're not supposed to do, but I just, honestly, what I do is I get home and I specifically leave work behind. When I'm driving home in the car, I'm always talking on Voxer, and I'm always talking to this group of fellow teachers, and we only talk about sports. So, like, we just talk about sports, and we end up talking about classroom and school things, and we, you know, we actually have a lot of shop talk, but mm-hmm. what's nice is there's the permission for it to be about, you know, something that's not about teaching. And then I go home and I'm with my kids and I'm, you know, making dinner or doing the dishes or something. And then really my place to go to reflect is typically blogging. I mean, it's kind of where I go, and that's where I kind of get recentered, I guess.
It's funny you mentioned that, and you're in the car and kind of getting away. I think I do that myself, and I used to dread the commute, but I love my commute now. I mean, love being in the car going to school, and I love coming away because that's where I get my Voxes. That's where I listen to my podcasts. I'm quiet. There's no one around. It's like, man, I really, really enjoy that time of morning or afternoon. So that's cool you said that. What about one of the biggest things that you've learned in the last year?
Wow. I mean, I think that on a teacher level, like learning programming more and how to teach programming. I mean, that's been like kind of a practical thing to try to figure out. But then kind of away from teaching, something that I've gotten really into is kind of an idea. And it's that, you know, the epic life is small. Like the best stories happening in school are small stories of like, because I used to do these big documentary projects and mural projects and this and that. Now I can't because of just life got, you know, busy. I mean, write about and those things that we talked about, and that means I can't do the same kind of things with students. And so I've gotten into this idea of, you know, what if the epic life is small? Like, what if it's playing catch with your kids? What if it's that moment that a kid learns to read and it happens all over America and nobody celebrates it, but it's pretty phenomenal. Like my two oldest kids entered kindergarten knowing letters and they left kindergarten reading books. That's insane. I don't know how it happens, but it blows me away. So I've just gotten really into this notion of like maybe the best stories are the small stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I just want to add to this because this is so true. I mean, I do this thing with this one class that I have. Man, they are a pain. I'll tell you, I mean, they all of them. This is a tough class.
Yeah.
But I found out we did this marshmallow tower one day. We were doing the spaghetti marshmallow tower, and they really enjoyed it. And at the end of the day, I was just like throwing marshmallows in their mouths, like from far distances across the room, and they just had so much fun. And they came in the next day and were like, that was like the best day ever in school. And so now, like, like all the time, I will do this. I bought huge packs of marshmallows, and like every few days, I'll just bust out a bag of marshmallows, and just like if we did a good job that day, I'll just throw marshmallows, and they think it's like the best thing ever. And that's, you know, 20 years from now, they're gonna be like, they're not gonna know anything about the moon phases or anything, but they're gonna remember, you know what, that guy was awesome. Like, he threw marshmallows in our mouth, and it was so much fun, you know. It really is. It's the small things that are epic. It's really cool. I've never heard it put that way, but it absolutely is totally true.
I'm curious about that. So Todd, like as a new administrator who's kind of new to that type of stuff, like how do principals tell those smaller stories?
How do they tell the smaller stories or see the smaller stories?
How do they get, because you're going to see those small stories, I assume, or maybe things get so crazy you don't always see it, but
that's where I see blogging coming in. I mean, that's why a lot of the things that I write about, sometimes I'll write about things that we do as a campus, but there's a lot of things that happen. Like, I try to be very involved in the classrooms and very involved with kids, and I think that's the way I can still build connections and still have those little moments. And even when I blog, sometimes I'll blog about a conversation a kid and I had that had nothing at all to do with school but existed because I still chose to see them as more than a number or a name on a page kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I'm on the same page as Chris. When you said that, I mean, it just made total sense to me, but I've never heard it put that way. And it was one of those things of it's just like, that's so true. And to me, I look at that and think that's completely where it all comes down to relationships, because that's when you get to see those little moments just explode into something else.
Yeah.
So what do you see as probably one of the biggest challenges in your job?
You know, I think some of it's external, some of it's internal. You know, I mean, I think on an external level, you know, with the new online testing that we're doing, my fear is that computers and photojournalism are going to become classes that are test prep. Because, you know, the one nice thing about technology not being viewed as important is that you got autonomy. But once the subject is viewed as important, you know, it can then potentially be tested. And when something is a tested subject, you know, it just comes with these set of policies that make it so much harder to teach. I've watched it happen. I've watched what happened to social studies classes, you know, that the mock trials and the debates and things like that are kind of pushed away for, you know, more close reading activities. So that's kind of like an external thing. And then on an internal thing, I think kind of the challenge I'm seeing is where to go, you know, with Write About getting bigger, with, you know, other things happening that are kind of getting bigger. There's that question of, you know, how do you balance it all? How do you keep it all together? How do you stay present in the classroom and not be and not think about something that's on a project outside of classroom? So even though I'm real careful about my time, what you can't always be careful about is how intentional you are in the moment, and that just takes a lot of work, and it's a struggle for me, honestly.
If you could go back and see yourself as a first-year teacher, what advice would you maybe give yourself?
I think I'd say it gets better. I just needed to know that it gets better, it gets easier, it gets more fun. It gets, like, you will manage a class. You're not crazy for not wanting to be using a system of rewards and punishment. You know, the hardest thing was to be thinking that a relational approach works, but still not being good enough in your, you know, that kind of stuff. Like there's the basics I lacked, like the body language, the confidence, the, you know, and I think I made the mistake of assuming that, like, I'm a sensitive person. So, like, I just don't want to cry when kids are bad. Like, I just don't want to cry. So I was like, what do I do? So I think I put on a persona of kind of tough guy that I wish I hadn't done, because I wish I had known you can just be you. You can be goofy and use humor and be relaxed and be fun and be sensitive, and kids will not run over you.
Right.
And I just didn't know that. So I got antagonistic. And so, I mean, I wish I could go back and redo those years really with more of a, like, just be you, you know. I'm curious what you guys think. Like, what would you go back and change?
Yeah,
or say to yourself, yeah.
Yeah, I think my thing is just stop thinking that you can do it yourself, and you need to really rely on everyone else around you. You know, I felt like I was armed. My mom was a teacher her whole life. Like, I knew going, you know, I did go through an alternative program, but I just felt like, I'm a huge guy. I'm 6'5". I'm going to go in and just dominate these kids, right?
Like, that's the same thought I had, man.
This is going to be easy, you know, and wow. No.
And that was me. Like, for me, it was like, I was in a inner city nonprofit. Like, I was running a mentoring program, and then it was like, oh, no, actually, no, it's really, really hard. Like,
it's totally hard. It
takes a long time to figure out.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about it. I was thinking my thing would just be to tell myself that it's okay to challenge the status quo, and that you can't make everybody happy, and that's okay to not have to make everybody happy.
Yeah, well, having worked with Todd in the same district, I have a feeling you were challenging the status quo.
Not my first year.
Okay. Well, you definitely did in your latter years. Say that. Hey, good for you.
Well, John, one of the questions that we always like to end on with our guests is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
I think I kind of knew this question was coming, but I didn't know what I would say. So, you know, I think I'm really passionate about this whole notion that learning should be fun. You know, that was a core value with Write About. We said, you know, writing should be fun. And that's like a controversial thing to say sometimes in education. Like, actually, fun is good. Like, it's not a bad thing. So I think I've gotten really passionate about the notion that learning should be fun. And then I think the other piece is just, I've always been really passionate about, you know, creativity. You know, creativity with teachers, creativity with students, that schools should be creative places.
Great.
John, thanks for taking some time to spend with us this Sunday evening. How can listeners connect with
users.
You?
Users. Totally. Picturing people strung out.
Yeah, really. How can they connect with you?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
So how can people get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you?
All right, so if you want to reach out to me, you can always email me at john@educationrethink.com. That's the name of my blog. And then my Twitter handle is @EdRethink. So,
and you can find us at EduAllStars HQ with a Twitter handle. And our website is eduallstars.com. You can also search iTunes to find the previous 90 episodes at using EduAllStars with no spaces.
And join us for our next episode as we interview another great person in the education field. Thanks again, John, for coming on with us. We really appreciate you giving us some of your time.
I appreciate it. Thanks.